Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Bridge, a Star Trek Multiverse podcast. As always, I'm your host, Adam, and with me is my co-host, Andrew. Andrew, how's it going?
Great. Great to be here. Thanks, Adam.
It's good to be back together and talking about Trek, and boy, does it seem like we have quite a bit to go over, and it's only going to get, you know, more involved, the news, at least the news items as we go on, and as things start filming again, because... How many shows do we got gearing up for some sort of production?
Gosh, I've lost count. And now you add in things like Tawny Newsome. There's official Star Trek podcasts.
Which I can't wait to listen to. Is that up yet? Or is it?
I've seen more pictures on Twitter, so I haven't seen the actual recording, but they've definitely got the publicity going.
I thought it was the 18th, but I could be wrong. I'm not 100% sure on that. But it's, if it's not available yet, it's imminent, that'll be a fun listen. So, yeah, and then like I said, I've heard from a Star Trek source that has been pretty reliable that there are a couple more shows that have yet to be announced. So we'll see. I'm looking for some more information before. We bring them up just in case, you know, I want to have some more background information before bringing them up, but there may be even more shows on the horizon, so we're not done by a long shot, which the more the merrier, as far as I'm concerned.
That is a great time to be a Star Trek fan, definitely. It's pretty much the best time to be a Star Trek fan.
I'm in a good place right now because I'm getting a lot of DC content and I'm getting a lot of Star Trek content, so I'm pretty good. The DC stuff got me because they're bringing back one of my favorite Batman in Michael Keaton. So that's good. I'm thrilled over that. And we're getting, at the very minimum, I would have been happy with just a Strange New Worlds announcement, but we're getting that and we're getting so much more. So color me all kinds of happy.
I think we're just in the best place for fandoms right now because I think...
Yeah, the real world stinks, but in the fandom level, it's pretty good.
and the studios are... There's enough product coming out that they can cater a bit more to what the fandoms have kind of always wanted, kind of the things that they've had to hold back on maybe to reach wider audiences. And that, you know, Star Trek maybe had to limit themselves in the past, but now they can do all these different ideas. And I don't know if they have more funding to do it or what their logic is, but I'm not complaining.
I think especially because all the streaming services are now in existence and vying for your attention, it makes sense to, if you're capable of doing it, give the fans what they want, because it's more, you know, it's more money in their pocket. So, I mean, it'd be stupid not for them not to be more open to doing things that they see getting the most buzz about online. So, it's. As many streaming services as there are, it's a good problem to have because we're getting more of the content that we want. Now it just becomes, okay, which streaming services do I want and which ones can I afford and so on and so forth. But, I mean, that as a fan, then you have to put your priorities, you know.
Right.
Okay, which goes first, which goes second, you know.
I was just describing the CBS All Access app, which I used to watch Lower Decks and Discovery and Picard, and it's kind of become my like Star Trek tax. And if I have to pay a Star Trek fee every month, so far I'm okay with that.
Yeah, it's like, all right, I'm good. In my case here, like they've sort of sold all the shows to, you know, a regular TV station, one geared for sci-fi, you know, genre television. So I don't have that. We at least with CBS All Access, I don't have that requirement to like pay that extra for it. If I did, I would. But right now, it's not a thing I have to deal with, so I'm good on that front. But when, for example, and even like me being a big DC fan, we don't have, or like they're doing the same thing with the DC shows that they're doing with Star Trek. So they're all putting it on a specific channel, The only problem I get into is with the Marvel stuff with the Disney Plus. So that's the one that I'm going to have to tack on. But I'm waiting for those shows to start before I tack it on, because I'm not going to sit here and watch, you know, Beauty and the Beast, the live action. It's just not my thing. So I'm not going to shell out, you know, $6 or $9 just for the Disney Princess stuff. It's not my thing. I mean, I guess I could if my niece came over, but I don't have to deal with that right now, so we're good. But yeah, so Disney Plus will be the one that I eventually have to add on. But unless Paramount says, all right, we're going to get those Canadians too, but we'll see. but for right now, I'm good. But I would pay it if I had to. So that I'm on board with you in that sense. But so since we've been sort of away, we've had the first 6 episodes of Star Trek Lower Decks debut. And before we get to that, we also had a Star Trek Day, which was a full day, I mean, 3.5 hours really worth of basically Comic-Con style panels.
Yeah.
Online, where you could watch and, you know, in a couple cases we got trailers, but often you're dealing with the cast, sort of talking about the cast of the different shows, talking about past experiences, and in some cases, taking some questions. And it was hosted by the combination of, I can't remember her first name, it escapes me now, but LeVar Burton's daughter.
Mika Burton.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you. And Will Wheaton, of course, was the other co-host.
I think it was the Voyager panel where LeVar Burton stepped out onto it was up until then I was thinking, okay, I don't know who Mika Burton is. As far as I can tell, she's like an Instagram influencer or some kind of social media thing. And then it clicked and I'm like, oh, well, that's another layer of cool. And I think even during one of the panels, somebody commented on that she has developed a career all her own, even separate from the fame of her father. So yeah,
and I think she's done some acting, so it wouldn't surprise me at some point if they tried to get her in there in some sort of role.
Oh, that would be cool.
I mean, I would do it. I mean, it's sort of like a legacy casting, kind of, sort of. I think it'd be fun. I mean, if she's up for it, and it, clearly she's not averse to doing things with Star Trek, because she hosted an event, so... it's not like she's like, no, I, you know, that's my father's thing and I want nothing to do with it. So it'd be cool, I think, to have her in either as a voice performer on one, either Lower Decks or there's the other, there's the new, the one that was announced by Nickelodeon, whatever. I can't remember again. The name is escaping me.
Is it Prodigy?
That's it, exactly. So either Lower Decks or Prodigy, or if they want to get her in Discovery or Strange New World, so I'd be open for it. I'd be up for it. So what was some of the panels that you really, that stuck out to you?
So I would definitely, Discovery and Lower Decks were the two big, content rich panels. Yeah. I mean, we're a few weeks into Lower Decks and I, you know, spoiler alert, I absolutely love it.
Oh yeah. And
just hearing the voice talent is just so fun, and they absolutely portrayed, I want to be their friends and I want to hang out in their houses and risk the pandemic or something, because they just seem like such fun people to be around. Yeah. And even if they, you know, even if they only talked surface level about the show, which they didn't, I was happy with how much they talked about where the show was going. But just like getting to enjoy the dynamic between the voice actors and the creative team is a lot of fun with Lower Decks. And then, in my opinion, I think Discovery really had the most concrete, like, this is what's coming down the pipeline, especially with the final trailer for the third season. So right, I was just very excited about both of those.
What I noticed about those panels, in both cases, you'd get the sense that these casts really do enjoy and appreciate each other.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, they're getting paid to do what they do, which, you know, of course. But I think what I get the sense of is that there's a general love of the material that they're working with. Like even Jack Wade, who had said this is, you know, really his first brush with Star Trek. It's not like he mm-hmm. was a super fan beforehand. Even he is understanding, you know, the place in pop culture and the enormity of what he's stepped into. And there's a reverence for it, mm-hmm. I think, from everybody involved, which is really fun to see. Like, it doesn't sound like it was generated by a studio and paid for by a studio and all that stuff, but it didn't feel like a studio generated, you know, here, say the generic talking points and
right. And, oh yeah, and, yeah. I'm
like it didn't feel like a press conference, like a generic press conference. You know mm-hmm. what I mean?
Yeah, and I think it's you know, I haven't watched every single Star Trek or otherwise streaming kind of opportunity that have come out over the summer. This is one of them, and I wasn't quite super expecting it, but once it was announced that it was happening, I was like, okay, cool, I'm on board.
Yeah, they only announced it like a week before.
Yeah. But I did think that, like, there were a few panels where I had more, I felt like I took something away, and then there were a few that, okay, I don't completely feel like a dire need for this panel to have existed, but I guess it's cool that it did, and yeah. I'm not going to complain, I guess.
I actually, in terms of ones that I just liked some of the stories being told, I really liked the Voyager panel. You know, again, that's another cast that doesn't feel like just coworkers. They do feel like a family, and the way they talked about each other and you know, talking about the importance of being the first female captain, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Really interesting to hear, especially because Kate Mulgrew felt kind of like that, you know, early on the studio executives, like she told the story where they're all watching the taping mm-hmm. and it felt like they were waiting for her to see if she would fail or not.
Right.
And how she was able to overcome that and kind of stuff. That was interesting to see.
And yeah, Go ahead.
Yeah, no.
I was just gonna say, even with, I was, you know, with the title of Star Trek Day, I wasn't sure. I was hoping, but I wasn't sure if there would be maybe they were going to work some kind of announcement for each of the different series, even if it's, you know, obviously Discovery can have a trailer, but they can announce, like, I don't know, some new book series or something for the Enterprise folks, or stuff like that. I think the Voyager team, what I really took away from that was, like, this was just them kind of having like a Zoom call and like hanging out and like, oh yeah, we just love to see each other. We're just like actually friends.
Which is great. I mean, it would have been cool if they announced some sort of, you know,
Voyager 8 high definition remastering.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, because why not take the product placement opportunity? But the fact that they didn't, and it was just a bunch of friends who happened to work together on Star Trek getting together and talking was really cool. Like, I appreciate that. Again, they genuinely seem to care about each other. And it wasn't just, well, I've collected all the paychecks I'm going to collect. Let's move on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I like that. The other one I liked was the panel with George Takei and...
Rod Roddenberry?
That's right. I was going to say Gene, but I'm like, yeah, that's not right. Rod Roddenberry. The stories that George told about what his family went through early on and mm-hmm. how, you know, Gene became like a surrogate father to him, like, you know, throughout the whole experience. I thought that was kind of, you know, touching mm-hmm. and really. It brought to mind something that I sort of kind of got aggravated about earlier that week, in the sense that, you know, and let me preface this by saying I appreciate who am I thinking of now? Damn it, it slipped my mind. See, I'm getting my Kirks confused. Shatner. Okay, yeah. So I appreciate Shatner's place in the universe and all he did for the show. But he came out when they released the Star Trek Day poster.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, it sounded very playful, like, where am I, right? And basically, he had somebody, or he superimposed his head, and you know, he enlarged it and then superimposed it on, I think it was Pike or whoever. And I thought it was all in good, like Shatner just being Shatner and having fun with the thing. Yeah, but then a fan had asked, why aren't you there? And he said, I'm not quoting him, I'm not paraphrasing, but it was something to the effect of, oh, it's just them, you know, pushing their woke agenda or something like that. And I'm like, really? I'm like, do you not know what the franchise that you were on was all about from the beginning? So it felt kind of like check your ego at the door, buddy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like a, well, kind of disappointing to hear.
Yeah, because it's like the franchise has always been about inclusion and equality and all that stuff. And now you're saying it's part of some woke agenda? Since when? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think I am. I might be. But wasn't Star Trek the first interracial kiss on television?
Yeah, absolutely. That was Uhura
and Shatner.
Nichols and William Shatner.
Yeah. So in my head, I'm thinking, how can you say that when you were part of something that Star Trek's been doing for decades? Like, it just, to me, it was a little off-putting. And aside from him not being on the poster, like, Sulu was there, Spock was there, and I'd argue that if you took a picture of both William Shatner and Spock, oh, sorry, William Shatner as Kirk, but you didn't show the Star Trek insignia, and it was just his headshot, or Leonard Nimoy, like just his headshot but with the ears, which of the two would you think, if you show it to somebody, would say Star Trek? If you took it to some remote thing where they didn't have TVs, I'm betting you that people would point to Nimoy.
Yeah.
More so being synonymous with Trek than Shatner. So it's like, check your ego at the door. And that is the stupidest thing you could possibly say.
Yeah, I think it's how do I say it? On the other hand, you know, it's been, you know, it's like 50 plus years since the original series. I mean, I guess, so William Shatner hasn't played Kirk since what? 1990, that would be Generations, I guess. So 90, yeah, like yeah. 4 or 5. So yeah, I definitely don't think
it's approaching 30 years. Like
wow, yeah.
But again, on some level, look, yes, and Star Trek has never been shy about promoting diversity, inclusion, and all that stuff. So if you want to highlight that even more now, by all means, go for it. I mean, now's the time, especially in the times we're living in. But also, if you look at the, you know, the characters featured on the poster in the forefront and in terms of size wise, in the biggest way, it was Discovery, which is the show that they're heavily invested in right now, and also, you know, Strange New Worlds and Picard. Though, I mean, those are basically the tenants of the live action franchise right now. Of course, they're going to push those more so than the 50-year-old show. I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just like at some point, I'm glad this was a fan-generated event, and they did it for the fans because everybody's in quarantine and there are no Comic Cons and such. And there's that on that level. But at the same time, in some way, shape, or form, they have to find a way to push their product.
They're
a business after all, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. At the end of the day, they have to sell Star Trek. And they have to make certain decisions to sell Star Trek. And I do think, you know, woke agenda, Mr. Shatner, that's not how I would phrase it, but you know, the importance of Star Trek being at the forefront and a leader in kind of equality and equity and speaking out for what's right at a time when, you know, culture really needs that. I think Star Trek's in the right. I mean, I think of kind of the how diversity plays out on the casts of our shows. Like, I love that. I don't know that I have the actual poster up, but I have one of the Star Trek Day posters up, and I don't have the Lower Decks. Is the Lower Decks people?
Lower Decks weren't there, but my rationale for that was, if you have a bunch of live action characters and then suddenly there's
a cartoon character, it gets a little weird, right?
It looks off, right?
But you know, we live in a time when we've got, you know, the two of the three live action Star Trek, or not even live action, two of the three Star Trek series right now have powerful Black women leads, and I mm-hmm. think that is so cool, and we should be doing everything to celebrate that. Yeah. And Star Trek should be the one that continues that legacy of breaking barriers and breaking glass ceilings and making sure that people are being represented in a way that television as a whole maybe is not doing otherwise. Like, Star Trek should be the one to break the mold. I don't think it's breaking the rules. It's more breaking the mold, breaking expectations. And I think Tawny Newsome has been, I fully endorse following Tawny Newsome on Twitter. She's just
she's hilarious. Great. Yeah, she's great. Yeah.
And I think she has done, really spoken about how different a time it is that we have two of the three series on right now have, Black women leaders in key roles. And that's so awesome compared to just, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. And
even the way they handle relationships, like it's on Discovery with, why am I blanking tonight?
Saru or?
No.
You mean Stamets and Culver?
Yes. What I like about that is that when you see them together, it just feels like a real world, relationship.
Yeah.
That evolves and plays itself out naturally. Like, there's no, they're not actually doing this, but I call it winking at the camera.
Right.
To say, make sure you're paying attention to us because we're trying to,
we're clearly doing this because we want you, the audience, to see this is happening.
Yeah, and here's an example. Supergirl does that all the time. Like, they have gay relationships, and it's like, and it's clearly like they're doing look at us, we're doing, and it's like, that is the wrong way to do it, because it takes you out of the show, from a standard, something's happening over here that has nothing to do with that, and then out of nowhere here come here's this relationship interlude but then also it's like it's not promoting a diverse relationship. Like, to me, if you do it in a ham-fisted way, it's pandering. It's not promoting. There's a difference. And I've always loved that Star Trek does it. The relationship is just, all right, they're together, and it's playing out as if, as any other relationship would, should, could, or et cetera. And I've always appreciated that about how they handle that. And so I don't think there's any reasoning to call, something like that promoting a woke agenda. Star Trek has always been about inclusion and stuff. So I don't know how he could be so far off base with the franchise that he was a part of. I don't know what's going on there. So seeing that panel with George Takei was really sort of kind of moving, especially because I was kind of frustrated with reading those comments like a day or two before. Mm-hmm. So I enjoyed that. But for me, the other one, because before we get into the Lower Decks and the Discovery panel, I definitely want to touch on Strange New Worlds, because I cannot wait for that show. When it was announced, basically the announcement of that show pushed me over the edge to start a Star Trek podcast because I was so excited for that show. So, I mean, that's how much I'm looking forward to it. And interestingly enough, I like how they talked about it as being, they're going to tell singular stories with a beginning, middle, and an end. And there's going to be like an over, like the character progression throughout the season is what's going to be the connective aspect of it. But each episode is going to be its own little adventure.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be a really, I think that's going to be a really welcome model in the Star Trek fandom.
It's harkening back to the original series in that aspect.
Yeah, and I think I look back on the original series now, and we're incredibly privileged with all the variety of television we have on in the 21st century. Yeah. But when I go to rewatch the original series, I always think, I just wish there was a bit more. It doesn't have to be the plot itself. Like, I'm not asking for The Walking Dead or something, but I wish there was just a hint more interpersonal consistency between episodes. Like, sure. There was the big obvious ones, like, haha, Bones and Spock like to nudge jokes at each other kind of thing. But I would have liked to see that grow even more, and especially with the... not the secondary characters, but the entire cast beyond the key three. I would like to see, more inter-character development between Sulu, Chekhov, and Uhura, and Scotty kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of the role Strange New World will get to play.
Yeah. Hopefully.
I mean, that's what I'm imagining. So I guess I'm excited that the panel really... And I might be mixing and matching the panels, but I think they said that they pretty much have the first season written.
They do. Yeah.
And now they're already working on like content for season two, and they're talking about going into number one's past, which I mean, you would pretty much have to do to play out that show. So there's I'm excited to hear what the unknowns are going to be.
Right.
Like,
exactly.
We've got. Pike, we've got Spock. We know that we have to operate within what we already know about Spock. We have to operate within what we already know about Pike, which makes me think, to balance out those two and number one, they'll add some other characters or some kind of recurring plot something. It sounds character specific.
Yeah, because they have to fill up the rest of the crew. All we know right now is there's three. Right?
What they need is like a blank page, really. So they're gonna. I imagine they'll add a few characters that are completely, not like anything we've seen before, and we'll get to new characters to know and love.
Right.
So that's just my theory.
And I like the way they made a comment about how this is the longest pilot to series announcement in the history of television, which was kind of funny because referencing, of course, the original pilot that got reshot and everything. So that was kind of cool. That was kind of funny. And then I want to get your thought on whether this was a serious comment or not. But Akiva Goldsman said that he's pushing for... Is somehow doing
a crossover
with Lower Decks.
I
I hope it's I true because
think I think it is. Yeah, that comment falls into a fun gray zone where even if it's a joke, I think there is the best jokes have an element of truth. I bet that there is an element of truth in there, in that like. Maybe we'll see like Jerry O'Connor cameo on Strange New World. Even if it's not playing Captain Ransom, he might make a cameo. Or there will be little nods like that will allow the modern... And I think that's the... I would not be surprised if that's the eventual plan or hope with all of the ongoing series to have some kind of... Maybe not as blatant as... Like I'm not thinking... Crisis on Infinite Earths type.
If they do something like, I'll tell you what, like, that winter, I've never been so excited for 5 episodes of television in my life. So if they do something like that, then bring it on.
I mean, if they did that, that would be that would be an interesting first for Star Trek.
Yeah, they've never, I don't think they've spanned that many episodes, like the cross, any connectivity they've done, right, has never crossed that many episodes. But just the idea, like the basic idea of potential, like throwing that out there would be intriguing. Like, I mean, here's an example. Supernatural had an episode where they crossed over with Scooby-Doo in it, but it was an entirely animated thing. The combination of live action and animation in a Roger Rabbit kind of style, that's just something that would intrigue me to no end. So just the fact that they put it out there, I'm like, see, now I want it, and that's if I don't get it, that's the real crime of it all. Is that now I'm so intrigued by that I want it. But yeah, I can't wait for this.
My guess is that goes in the category of a joke with a hint that will come back to surprise us all.
Yeah. So, but on the whole, I'm incredibly excited for Strange New Worlds, and I can't wait till they're given the green light to start filming. I think, if I've read my news info correctly, that's probably gonna be filming here in Toronto, I think. So it's just a matter of when they're given the green light to come up here and start doing the whole quarantining thing, and then 2 weeks after that starting up. So but I'm eagerly anticipating that. So onto the shows that we had some footage for. I mean, what we'll do is we'll talk about Discovery, and then we'll segue right into our thoughts about Lower Decks. But so the Discovery panel, basically, the big takeaway was the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we got two new things: a new title card with a new font,
mm-hmm.
and a new trailer. I really liked the new title card. The sort of, it's very clean, very heroic looking, which differentiates it from the original two seasons. Because remember, they were dealing with, you know, the Klingon, the battle with the Klingon, and you know, we're kind of in the midst of a war. So, you know,
it's a very aggressive font.
Yeah.
Or it that still kind of harkens back to a bit of the original. Original series type, the slant to it.
I like how the title card is reflecting what's going on in the series at the time.
It kind of reminds me how the opening to Discovery, the opening credits, have changed a little bit between season one and two, mm-hmm. where season two had a bit more like the technology that is kind of coming apart in the opening credits is different, and they had like the Red Angel, and the Red Angel started off in season two as kind of blurrier, and as the show revealed more information about it, the Red Angel got more in focus and you could see more details in certain things. So
right, yeah,
I like that those little, I don't know if they rise to the level of Easter egg, but those little
little creative touches, yeah.
If you're watching, you'll appreciate, and if it's on in the background, it's not, you know,
it's not so in your face.
You're going to miss.
Yeah, yeah. So I dug that, and then the trailer itself. Let's talk a little bit about that. So it seems to me that, first of all, the part of the trailer where Michael realizes that there's, you know, life on where she's landed, and her like jubilation at that fact, I'd imagine that's gonna be everybody in the world when this pandemic has resolved itself.
Yes.
So I'm like, they're already sort of foreshadowing, hopefully, what real life reaction would be. in our situation. But the trailer clearly suggests or gives the impression that Saru is taking up the captaincy of the Discovery. So what are your thoughts on that? Because I think it's pretty much what should be happening given what's happened in the first two seasons.
So yeah, with the trailer, we do see, you know, Saru has those the uniform of the 2250s has those kind of gold pipes on the shoulders. Mm-hmm. And at one point Saru's uniform has the captain marking. So the presumption we can make is that he gets, you know, either they appoint him captain, or my theory is that the past trailers have kind of said, you know, we're 1,000 years in the future and the Federation is no more. But I think it's starting to soften to the Federation is not what we know it as.
Yeah,
so I think we're arriving more at a, it's Starfleet is not what you recognize, but it still exists in some capacity. And I think we'll end up at a place where maybe Burnham and Saru are captains of ships.
Oh, co-captains. Yeah,
something. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think they are both going to be charged in some way with a leadership role.
Right.
And yeah. I think that's why we see in a lot of the images, in a lot of the image, but not all of them, she's not even in her Starfleet uniform. She's in kind of more of a civilian.
Yeah, I think at the end, near the end of the trailer is when she puts the, she's got the uniform on and she's attaching the
new like emblem badge.
Yeah, the insignia. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not quite a comm badge, but maybe in the future it will be.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm excited for Saru. So Saru, you know, let's give him some props as the first alien captain lead of a Star Trek series. We've never had one of those. And I've always.
And Doug Jones is so great in that
yeah. And you know, there was a lot of little hints about what the future will hold, and I've started to put together what my theory timeline is. So,
what do you think about? I mean, tell us a little bit about that. Like, tell, you know, give us your.
Well, yeah. So we know, you know, the facts that we have is, so there's this burn. The burn did something to the Federation. The writers in the panel said, you know, it wasn't this gradual decline. The Federation was at its peak when a cataclysmic disaster happened, the burn. And somehow the Federation couldn't recover from that.
Okay, yeah.
I'm stealing this theory from Twitter because I really liked it, that maybe it's something like the Omega molecule has ruined warp drive and you can no longer, if you know, Starfleet would be crippled if they couldn't use warp anymore, because there's no way to get from one. You know, if you remember the Voyager episode, the Omega Directive, the whole concept is Omega molecules ruin subspace for an incredibly long distance. So even like one molecule would render Voyager wouldn't have been able to get home, something like that. So if there was a similar disaster within the Federation, there would be no way to get from one planet to another, and the whole infrastructure of the Federation would essentially collapse. So that's my theory of what might happen. But the way this Twitter user phrased it, and I should look them up so I can credit them, is, and in a situation like that, a starship that can travel on a spore drive would be the hero, because they wouldn't need subspace. They could use the whatever the spore drive runs on, the something network.
Yeah, I can't remember that. It's
been a second since I've. Is it Illyrium? Mycerium? What does that run on?
I think, Illyrium, I think. I think you're right.
Mycelium. Yeah. Mycelium.
There it is.
So that's kind of season three is the Discovery using the spore drive to go from mission to missions to solve, you know, whatever they need to do, because we know that the two new characters, Gray and Adira, who is, I believe, Gray will be the first trans character as a young Trill, and then Adira will be the first non-binary character who I don't think they've said what they are, but they appear to be human. And I'm confident that if Trill mythology is going to be a noteworthy plot point of the third season, that those two characters are probably going to play a big part in that. And if I remember correctly, yeah, they get introduced in the, I think, third and fourth episodes. So we have kind of, you know, our initial timeline is Burnham celebrates that the plan worked. Burnham is on this planet and doesn't know if the Discovery is survived or not. The Discovery crash lands on the planet and they don't know if Burnham does survive or not. They somehow encounter aliens that we know and love, like the Andorians, and kind of acclimate to the 31st or 32nd century. They end up with some directive from whatever the Federation or the Starfleet of that era is, and then they go on their adventures to try to reunite the Federation or something. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But
sounds very plausible for sure.
Yeah, that's my theory so far from the bits and pieces I've
got. And I saw something mentioned about the uniform of some of the characters that it looks similar to the future, like a certain episode of a Voyager.
Relativity. We go to the 29th century. Yeah. And that's another one of the. So I guess that's a plot point I'm interested to see how they explain out. So when we last left our heroes, the 29th century was policing time, and the 31st century was policing time over on Enterprise. Mm-hmm. So if we're in the 32nd century, and we've somehow resorted back to anarchy in some way, I guess, so what happened to the time travel technology? Like, even if you can't go to warp, shouldn't you be able to time travel and solve some kind of
something?
So I'm interested to see I have no theories on what happened to time travel technology.
Right. It was just interesting that the uniform looks similar to that. Yeah.
But I do think if we go back to the short trek, what's it called? The one that is set aboard Discovery. And I don't think it's called Funny Face, but there's a short trek about it's called Calypso, and he you know discovers the Discovery, and it's all it's essentially abandoned in the distant future. I think that episode that short trek is filled with clues that we don't realize are clues, because that is filled with mysteries that we have left unanswered. Right. You know, we've got this escape pod in the distant future. We've got, when is the Discovery abandoned for 900 years? Like, what's happening there? Yeah. So I think the third season, we'll look back on that short trek and go, oh, now it all makes sense.
Good point. Yeah, very good point. I didn't put that together, but that's a good idea. That's a good point.
Worth rewatching before season three starts back up.
But yeah, no, definitely that's what I'm gonna do. That, and I'll probably revisit the last couple episodes of season two, just to sort of get my brain in the headspace. But but yeah, I love what we saw. You know, that's a great final trailer. It got me really excited for the season. But at the same time, this was the one time that I didn't want to like fast forward to get to it quicker, because I'm enjoying Lower Decks. So I want to finish enjoying that before we get to Discovery Season 3. Speaking of Lower Decks, we've got 6 episodes that have been released and watched. I gotta say, I am loving this series so far.
Awesome. Me too.
my concern going in was we've never really had a comedy series in Trek. And so my thought process was this going to feel like it belonged as a part of Trek?
Yeah, there were I think there were a lot of ways to fail with Lower Decks.
Yeah.
I don't think they have, but I think they had a challenge ahead of them. So
and the other question that I had was the comedy going to be making fun of the source material, you know, the franchise. And the two answers to my question are yes, it belongs and feels like Star Trek, but also that the comedy works. It's not making fun of the franchise. It's paying homage to the franchise.
Right.
And that's a big difference and accomplishes a totally different thing. So I'm really enjoying myself watching it. I've already got invested into, you know, the main leads, for sure. One of the things that I really love is the opening sequence, the title sequence, because it feels so much like when it starts off, it feels so much like Next Gen, but then, you know, it does its own spin on the whole thing. But just like the as the names come across the screen, like it, and the sound of the theme, it just calls to mind a lot of memories of Next Generation. And that to me is a positive thing. So I enjoy the opening sequence. And it's kind of set in that era, if you will, right?
Yeah.
The show itself.
Well, I think the writer, is it Mike McMahon, is clearly the right kind of fan to write this show. And he is clearly like harking back to, it's not even just like just referencing the Next Generation.
Oh, he's referencing everything. Yeah.
It is someone who truly understands what fans loved about the Next Generation and like paying homage to it and just as showing it. The last episode of Enterprise was, you know, described as, I think, a Valentine to the fans, whether, you know, there are any fans that would agree with that or not. But I think like what Mike McMahon has done is very a Valentine. Like everything Mike McMahon does is a Valentine to the fans. Oh, and I think absolutely. He's just doing awesome job. I love it.
Absolutely. We've talked about Tawny Newsom, you know, having the podcast and everything else. But I love her character. And like the whole, I was surprised at the revelation that the captain was her mother.
Yeah. So we're going forward with assumption that you have, whoever is listening has watched the first six episodes or does not care about spoilers.
Yes.
Right. But no, it's just, yeah. Go ahead.
We've waited 6 weeks. Come on. If you're not watching it and listening to this show, then I'll put it in the title that we're talking
about. If we have not otherwise convinced you to go watch it right now.
Yeah.
Take no time.
And then come back. So, but that's revealed in the first episode. So it's not really going to ruin God knows what for the audience. So we'll just let it be. But yeah, that reveal kind of, I wasn't expecting it.
Mm-hmm.
And the sort of tension that it creates.
I think Next Generation Star Trek was so careful about internal character friction. Like, I think Gene Roddenberry's wish was that the crew never have tension or like a negative relationship between each other. It's always with the outside stimuli. Like, the character of the week is where the negativity stems from, and that's how we viewed the characters. And I think having a parent on the ship is a, it's not the first, I mean, we had Jake and Captain Sisko, but that was a very different situation. I think this allows more of a combative mother-daughter. I don't know if it's a traditional mother-daughter relationship, but it's a more, it's well, fun I mean, to
they,
watch.
They do, just knowing, growing up with my mother and my sister, I mean, it does get, you know, combative at times.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very much par for the course in that respect. But I like that as much as you can have them, you know, going back and forth and butting heads. There's the one episode where they really work it together to sort of get through. It was the one where the ship.
So Mariner and Captain, I think it was Moist Vessel.
Yes, that's the one. Yeah.
Yeah, they're towing the terraforming ship or something, and the ship starts turning into corals and trees, and they have to. I don't remember how they solve it off the top of my head, but they have to.
But they work together to solve the issue, and you sort of see that underneath all that bickering, there is a love and respect there. So I think, you know, they sort of skirt around, you know, to get to Gene Roddenberry's ultimate way. You know, they get there, but they do it in a way that and that was one of the episodes that I really liked. I think around episode four, so 4, 5, and 6. It really settles into, let's tell, while being comedic and you know, a little off the wall, let's also tell traditional Trek stories. And I think 4, 5, and 6 really, they start hitting that mark. But yeah, I like the dynamic between those characters. And I like how different Boimler and Beckett Mariner are. And their dynamic together, I think, really makes the show. The thing that made me laugh was the episode where Boimler has the girlfriend on the other ship.
Cupid's errant arrow.
Yes.
These episode titles are. They're definitely, they're comedic or something, but there's some, I feel like the writers are like picking dramatic words for comedic value in these episodes. Right,
exactly. So it's that balance that they're pulling off. So, but I like that she automatically assumes that Boimler's girlfriend is some sort of alien.
Yeah. Yeah, they actually have the line where it's like, oh my gosh, do you think she's cheating on me? And she's like, no, of course not. I think she's a changeling or in this kind of crazy alien or that kind of crazy alien or a lizard person trying to lay eggs in you.
how they rail off different species that we've seen on different treks before. Mm-hmm. Also that one of the ships or some of the ships are named after, you know, Vancouver and some surrounding areas in Vancouver, which is where they apparently do the animation, which is why they chose some of those names. So I found that kind of humorous as well. But there's that, again, conflicting personalities between Boimler and Mariner. But again, you see that the camaraderie and sort of, you know, the deep down they have the same objective. I mean, like Boimler is very much
professional and personal respect.
Yeah. Like Boimler is very much by the book. You know, he wants to advance, right, in the ranks, whereas she's more. I'm gonna do what I have to, but I'm gonna do it my way, right?
Yeah,
get there on my terms. Yeah,
beyond rank and kind of taking the opportunity to teach him that she has been there, and the lesson that she learned is that being true to herself was better than being obsessed with rank. And I think she's trying to teach that to him so that he doesn't have to learn it the hard way like she does. That's kind of how I interpret that. So
I like the peek into her past, like the flashbacks that we got. Like it was a little thing, but it added some, like it added to what you're speaking of, that she's experienced a higher rank and she's, you know, been through some dramatic experience because of it. And so that's why she's like, I'm just going to do my thing and sort of, you know, be my own person. And that's more important than any rank that I could carry. So I really dig their dynamic. And we also have, let's see who the other characters are.
So we've got Tendi is the Orion. Yeah. I don't know if she's a nurse. I think she works in sick bay. I think she's a
works
nurse.
In sick bay. Yeah.
Or maybe she's like a medical technician. I don't know if they've really.
Yeah, I think it's more of a technician,
exactly
right?
Exactly
yeah.
what she does.
And then you have Anson Rutherford, which is right. the other main, yeah. Main character.
I do think that with Tendi and Rutherford, I'd love to see them. Like, I think we've kind of like scratched the surface of what they have versus Mariner and Boimler. And I'd like
to
see.
You're talking about you'd like to see them in some sort of relationship or?
Well, I foresee that's probably where we're going, is my guess.
With those but two or with just to clarify?
With Tendi and Rutherford, I think.
Yeah. Because I don't think I want to see Mariner and Boimler.
Oh, no. I don't want to see that. But. I think a lot of the time we've seen Tendi and Rutherford, their kind of development has maybe been a secondary to Mariner and Boimler, with the addition of there's some romantic tension there. So I'd like to see, I guess, Tendi and Rutherford continue to grow into three-dimensional characters and see where that goes. So like if we had a Rutherford-focused episode, like more Rutherford focused episodes or Tendi focused episodes. And I know we're at the start of the show, so you know they're still experimenting with dynamics and making sure that, you know, I think they sold the Mariner Boimler dynamic pretty quickly, like the first two episodes, and I love it and I could watch it over and over again. And after the first two episodes, I think they've gotten more comfortable with, okay, let's reshuffle, you know, kind of who's with who for the A plot, the B plot.
Yeah.
But Tendi and Rutherford, I like as characters. I just want to see more of them. Boimler,
absolutely,
are on the right path.
Because he's got like Rutherford's got that kind of mix between Data and LeVar Burton, on. Why are names?
Commander LaForge.
LaForge. Yeah. He's kind of like the best of, you know, he's got the greatest hits of both of them. And I'm really enjoying that character, or those two characters, I should say. And I like the fact that the main crew really never overshadows the Lord X.
I love that because that's exactly what I've always hoped for. And I've kind of always dreamed of a Star Trek Lower Decks. So the fact that it's coming true is a dream come true.
Yeah.
But they do have a pretty solid presence in every episode, which is more than I expected, but it never overshadows
exactly
the Lower Decks character. It's always it's always like that perfect balance of they're there to tell the kind of traditional Star Trek plot story.
Yeah.
And they might interact with the Lower Decks character, like the ensigns, to kind of provide more context, but their adventures are never overshadowing Lower Deck, the ensigns or the Lower Deck characters.
And Jerry O'Connell is hilarious as Commander Jack Ransom. Like it's like the stereotypical, like jock, macho kind of character.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hilarious. Let me see here. The episode that really felt like they were doing some really cool Star Trek things, but also freaked me out a bit, was the most recent one, which was Terminal Provocations, it's called.
Okay.
And it was basically because you have you have, who was it? Let's see. Is it Tendi? And yeah, it was, okay, I got that right. It was Rutherford and Tendi. They were in.
Oh yeah, that got a little dark in the holodeck,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, in the holodeck with
Badgie.
Badgie, that's it. That was creepy, man. That thing was. It was a comedy, but it was funny. But it was also, I'm like, that's kind of, that character's kind of disturbing.
Just like, I think that like, I truly believe that they landed where they wanted to with that.
Yeah,
like,
oh, yeah.
They wanted to see a creepy humor that maybe leaves you thinking, huh, that's not where I expected that.
Like if that was a if they did that in live action, I mean, obviously it would have to look different than it would animated to be kind of creepy, but. But yeah, you could pull something like that off, I think. Mm-hmm. Like the hologram, the holodeck gone wrong kind of thing. In that kind of way, it's definitely. I mean, we've seen some of that in past track, but you know, in this animated setting, they could take it to a degree that you know.
Yeah.
Wouldn't work in a live action setting.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that they do that. They like they take it to a degree that wouldn't work in a live action setting, but they still, for the most part, they haven't done anything that exceptionally wouldn't work in a Star Trek live action show. Like they could have done something really dramatic, that I can't even imagine. But you know, essentially, it was just you know CGI floating badge, and then like a normal you know.
Yeah,
Bajoran forest. You know, they could have reused one of the water reclamation center that they're always reusing in California. But for the most part, it's nothing too out there. Like the ships are not too out there. Even like the aliens are all, you know, pretty.
They're pretty much confined to what you'd expect to see.
Yeah, from Star Trek. You wouldn't be too surprised to see on a live action Star Trek.
Right.
So I think I just can't stop saying enough good things. I love it.
So I really like that episode. What was if you had to pick a favorite, what would be so far your
I would say I think Envoys. So the second episode was my favorite. And then first of all, I went to kind of think through all of them and think, all right, if I had to assign them a rating. And I pretty much rated all of them really well, and I think I'm just bad at rating things because
everybody gets a person.
Yeah, none of them get a C. They all get eights or above. But I think Envoys was the perfect. The way I was thinking of it as I was watching it was, if I had written a Star Trek fan fiction, this is exactly what I would have written. I wouldn't have been as funny, but I wanted to like I would have loved to see like. Aliens that we haven't talked about in 40 years and alien architecture and things that like references that diehard fans would love that combined with like a fun plot that combined with like humor combined with like personal development and just I thought the joke like everything I just loved Envoys. The first episode was also, like, I would probably rate that my second favorite just because it introduces, like, I think I already said that it was easy to fail, easy to, like, not do this show correctly. But they have done, like, a great job with it. And it just keeps getting better. And
the show's really defied my expectations.
Yeah.
Because I was like, look, unless they do something really egregious and it's like, it goes against, you know, what the core of Star Trek is, you know, I'm going to be inclined to like this on some level because it's Star Trek. The question for me was, how much am I going to like this? Is this just going to be something where it's Trek and I'm killing time until Discovery? Or... am I really going to look forward to it every week? And I'm really looking forward to it every week.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it.
So if you had to ascribe the first six issues, I got comic book brain, six episodes, a rating, whether it be letter grade or out of five or however you want to do it. I'll follow your lead. So if you had to grade it, the first six episodes, what grade would you give them
on the whole? Grade. A minus. Have we consistently used letters or should I use numbers? I'll say A minus.
I mean, we've only done Enterprise, so far we...
I don't remember what system we used.
Yeah, we don't have a real you know, track record to go off of. But yeah, that's a fair rating. I'll give it a straight up A. They've proven there is the show and the characters are built on a solid foundation, and it seems like every episode is you know, trending upward instead of being just meandering in the middle or you know, fluctuating from one is less than the another one is better. Like, it's consistently, the trend is on a positive slope, and I only see that continuing. And like I said, I can't wait to see where they take us. And this, you know, series kind of seems to have like a sort of individual, like each episode is its own story.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so yeah, I don't think I've seen, with the exception of maybe the Mariner serving as a mentor to Boimler. Yeah, I haven't really seen any connection between the plots.
It's going to be very curious for me to see what kind of season finale they end up.
Yeah.
Like, is there going to be a cliffhanger? How are they going to... I mean, there probably will of some sort, but...
Star Trek loves its cliffhangers. Yeah. I don't remember. Yeah. Gosh, what was the last season finale that wasn't a cliffhanger?
Maybe the series finale of Enterprise, because there's nowhere left to go. But yeah, it's going to be really interesting to watch how the rest of the season plays out, but I couldn't be happier that this show exists.
Mm-hmm.
This has me really excited for not only future episodes and season, but also the other animated series that we know is on the way. Yeah, I mean, I know that'll be more geared to younger folk, but I'll still watch it because it's Star Trek. So,
I have a feeling that it will be, the bar is set very high with Lower Decks. So when I go to watch Prodigy,
that's it.
I hope they are aware that the bar is set very high and that, and again, they have to balance.
You can do it for a younger audience and still be you know, top notch. Just because it's a younger audience doesn't mean things have to devolve into like Teletubbies,
right?
You know,
gosh, I hope it's not that.
Yeah, oh god, please don't. That's a nightmare in and of itself. But you know, I'm looking for, I've never really, aside from the original animated series, I've never thought of Star Trek as an animated franchise, but now because of Lower Decks, if they want to add more animated entries, by all means, I'm open for it. So lots of we're definitely going to, of course, come back for the back, you know, the back half of the season to finish it out and review it like we did tonight. But yeah, so far so very good, and bring on the next batch of episodes. But that's pretty much all I have to say. Anything else you want to add, Andrew?
Just that, you know, especially around Lower Decks, you know, this, they just do such a good job of telling the Star Trek jokes I wish I could tell with, like, my real-life friends, but they don't, like, watch enough Star Trek to understand it. So for them to, it's kind of like having that friend who understands Star Trek. And
so your outlet for Star Trek jokes is basically Twitter in here.
Yeah, exactly. And they tell them, but still, Lower Decks tells them in a way that it's funny, but you don't have to get the references. But it feels like humor design, like it somehow balances two very, very high expectations of, you know, having to be funny to everyone, and having to be funny to specific Star Trek fans, and they somehow intertwine that perfectly. Exactly. I don't know how they do that.
Because if you're somehow getting a new person to Star Trek, I would think they laugh at the jokes.
Mm-hmm.
But a longtime fan will also like you. So you make a good point in that regard, for sure. But
easy tightrope to walk.
No, definitely not. Especially with a franchise that has gone on for, what, 5 decades, I think it is?
Right.
Well said. If people want to get in touch with you on social media to continue the Star Trek conversation, where can they go about doing that?
Yes, please connect with me on Twitter at AJ Halliwell, HALLIWELL.
Awesome. And if you want to get in touch with me on Twitter, it's Adam_LeafsFan, or on the Facebook. We have a Facebook page. It's the Multiverse Musings Podcast Network group. So go there and request admittance into the group. And either myself or one of my other co-hosts will add you, and we can continue talking all things Trek or superheroes or anything else there. But we hope you enjoyed this, because we enjoyed bringing it to you. And until next time, we want you to stay safe, enjoy Trek, and live long and prosper. So long, everybody.